So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots, and you jackbooted thugs as well. It's good to have you here tonight. It is May the 1st, 2014. It is Kentucky Derby Week here in Louisville, KY, where we host the show. No, I don't know if I'm going to get into any Derby picks for you. I'm still studying those horses, and I don't think you come here for sports anyway. I don't think you come here for bread and circuses. But if you do have a comment, as we might be all over the map a little bit tonight, give us a call as usual at 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. Now, getting started, we will go straight to the calendar, the Liberty calendar here, the Freedom calendar, if you will. This week in history, we've got the Kent State Massacre. This is where the government went in and killed college students under Richard Nixon. 1970, Kent State Massacre. We also got the Lusitania sunk 99 years ago this week, 1915. And we got the first Transcontinental Railroad this week, was in 1869. Now that being said, we'll get right to the night's topics. And we know that there's a lot of elections coming up, and we don't want to pretend that elections are everything because, hell, I got some friends that tell me, a la the famous Claire Wolfe and her 101 Things to Do Until the Revolution, Claire Wolfe used to say that elections were a waste of time and that you were wasting your time in voting. Well, we're not going to go that far, but we know there are more important things out there, and unfortunately, the politicians determine what you can and can't do because a lot of you haven't decided to take up arms and defend yourself. I mean, we saw what happened out in the ranch when Mr. Clive Bundy decided to defend himself. We saw that they stood up to the government. We saw the government had to back down. So that being said, we try to promote Liberty candidates. Now, what is interesting this week is we're hearing this song and dance from our Senator Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. We're hearing the song and dance where he says he's willing to support Matt Bevin, if Matt Bevin wins the election, of course. Now, what did Gandhi say? First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And that's what we're hoping happens here with the Bevin campaign in a little under 3 weeks, right at 2.5 weeks right now, ladies and gentlemen. And this is perfect. So we got this hotly contested statewide primary. And, of course, the Republican Party of Kentucky has made a tradition of having their little kumbaya moment bullshit where they invite all the combatants to a post-election unity rally. If you remember, back in 2003, for those of you all who were around here at that time, that was when the gubernatorial campaign saw a solid support behind Ernie Fletcher. And that move in the unity picnic party, kumbaya moment, whatever you want to call it, was helpful with that. In 2010, you had a skeptical, very reasonably skeptical Tea Party crowd with Rand Paul, had to meet the shocked and dismayed establishment contingent with good old Charles Mervyn Grayson and Mitch McConnell in that fall campaign. Now, it's funny to look back 4 years ago because we know they hated Rand Paul. We know the McConnell campaign couldn't stand him because he stood for liberty, and they did their best to defeat him. But now they have to just smile and grin and bear it because they know that he is the future of the party if the party's going to survive and not go the way of the Whigs. So you got these polls that are continuing to narrow, and Matt Bevin has every reason to continue hedging on whether or not he would attend a little unity rally if the people select Mitch McConnell. In fact, I think that in the next week or two, Matt Bevin should put out a press release demanding full retractions and apologies from McConnell, and he should have to get apologies for all these personal attacks launched against them. You know, I don't really care that Matt Bevin's children called Mitch McConnell a liar. I know Ed Springsteen came on here and thought it was just horrible. And I said, Ed, yeah, because a politician has never used their children in a commercial before, right? And, of course, Ed was like, but. You know, I don't have a problem with his children being in the campaign ad. What I have a problem with is McConnell's horrible behavior during his campaign. He needs to either seek to make amends now or explain why he thinks someone who is so untrustworthy as this cartoonish image that he created about Matt Bevin should deserve general election support. Simply in the name of party loyalty. And this is the problem I have. because this is what the party preaches. Destroy each other, destroy each other, destroy each other in the primary. Have all these dirty campaign ads, but then hug each other. Like it's the Manson family values or something, folks. And very few people outside the Republican establishment, moderate professional politician hack circles, view party loyalty as such a sacrosanct as does McConnell. McConnell could and should be able to be sweating on this point a lot in the upcoming days. And I think that our good friend Matt Bevin should make him sweat. And those comments borrowed from our good friend David Adams, who printed that over at his blog, Kentucky Progress. I'm not upset because Matt Bevin has not decided to endorse McConnell. If you're in a fight, you don't all of a sudden endorse the opponent. I want to put this in terms that these people understand. They think it's all a game to them. Politics is their little game. Many of them were never athletic to participate in any real sport. Maybe they played soccer or tennis or something. But this is their game, and it's a cutthroat game. But guess what? There's no sporting event out there that says you lose in the semifinals and you have to endorse the person who beat you in the finals. That doesn't work that way. But in their little perverted game, it does work that way. So Mitch McConnell, I guess, all of a sudden doesn't believe all the attack ads that he's spamming at me and you. We've been telling you all along that the attacks were lies. We've been telling you all along that Matt Bevin is a smart, gritty, entrepreneurial, young face of the future for the Republican Party. We've been making it really clear for you. You got the Republican Party of the past when dinosaurs roamed the earth in the state of Kentucky, and you look at what little they've accomplished, and they wonder why they've never been able to take over any seat of power in the county or in the state or in the legislature or in the governor's mansion more than 1 4-year term. They wonder why it's like that, and look at their heroes of the dinosaurs in the Republican Party. We should call them Dino Rhinos, right? The Dinosaur Rhinos. And they're heroes of the party if they had their own little Mount Rushmore, if they could sit it out there outside of the nice big board at the Churchill Downs this weekend. Their Mount Rushmore of neocon dinosaur Republicans in the state would be, of course, I've said it before, Mitch McConnell, David Williams, Richie Farmer, and Trey Grayson. And if I got to explain it again, I will. David Williams was their hero, Blackjack David Williams, who told all the people in Berksville he'd protect them from big, bad gambling. Blackjack Williams, who was known to go across the river to Indiana and gamble while lying to his people and talking about how he was so anti-gambling. And what happened to David Williams? He barely got past Phil Moffitt in the gubernatorial primary with help from Bobby Holtzclaw. We'll talk about horse races. Go look up some of these old-time horse races where an extra horse will be put in a race just to help one horse beat another horse. And that's what they did in the race with Phil Moffitt, David Williams, and Bobby Holtzclaw. And after David Williams barely escaped that primary, he got his ass handed to him by P. Paul Bashir. And what happened after David Williams got his ass handed to him by P. Paul Bashir? Well, he ran out and quit. He quit the state senate. Why did he quit the state senate? Because Pat Paul Bashir, who just beat him in the election, appointed him as a judge. How convenient. Second head of their four horsemen of the dinosaur neocon Republican Party of Kentucky was Little Richie Farmer. Everybody knows about Little Richie Farmer. He got famous from being from the backwoods of Kentucky and the way he so wonderfully could put a little orange ball into a peach basket twice as big as the ball. And Little Richie Farmer worked all the way up to being agriculture commissioner. And he raped and pillaged and plundered and destroyed and embarrassed and insulted and disgraced the office of Kentucky Department of Agriculture. And Little Richie Farmer was on the ballot with David Williams getting their asses kicked. And then Little Richie Farmer, got caught with his hand in his cookie jar or got caught on a rifle while poaching animals from his vehicle. Or was it when he got caught having state employees build him basketball courts on his private home? or whether we got caught employing his girlfriend while he's still married in the office of agriculture commissioner. And little Richie Farmer, guess where he's at now? He's in West Virginia in prison, boys and girls. And then we get to the third head of the four horsemen of the neocon dinosaur Republicans of Kentucky. And that is good old Charles Merwin Grayson III, or as they so astutely call him, Trey Grayson. And Mr. Grayson was the poster boy of neocon Republicans, and he was the darling of Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. And he was supposed to run for U.S. Senate and be right there with his hero, Mitch McConnell. Guess they would have been dumb and dumber in Kentucky, because God knows we need more help with stereotypes making our ass state look stupid. But guess what happened? A funny thing happened in 2010, the aforementioned election, when they all of a sudden came together with a kumbaya moment. Rand Paul beat the living shit out of Trey Grayson in the Republican primary. And what did Trey Grayson do after he got his ass kicked? Well, he also quit his job as Secretary of State, and he ran off to Harvard to raise money for Democrats. So there you go, folks. There's only one head left of the four-headed monster that is the dinosaur neocon Republican Party of Kentucky. One head got his ass kicked and quit his election and got appointed to be a judge by the same politician who kicked his ass. Another politician got his ass kicked, ruined in office, and went to prison. Another politician got his ass kicked, ran off, quit a job, and is now raising money for Democrats at Harvard. And one head is left on the four-headed monster, and that's Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. And it's getting desperate, and it's getting ugly, and it's getting scared. Because if you don't believe all those attack ads, Mitch, that you've been spamming at us, why did you tell us that you wanted to punch the Tea Party in the nose? Why did you say that you wanted to crush the Tea Party and you didn't think anybody from the Tea Party could get elected? You have their type of Republican Party, Mitch McConnell, Trey Grayson, David Williams, Richie Farmer, Shelley May, and you have our type of Republican Party, Rand Paul, Thomas Massey, Matt Bevin, Phil Moffitt, Jamie Comer. Pretty clear which side is liberty and which side is not. Now, what I think was funny, something that I put out on the social networks last week, since we were talking about our good friend Phil Moffitt, who's running for state representative in the seat in which I used to live, this is what you call a scorecard to tell who is for liberty and who is the establishment. Phil Moffitt's donors, according to CNT Pure Politics, and they pulled the numbers for the same registry election finance that we can, and Phil Moffitt's numbers show his donors include James Comer, Thomas Massey, Terry Ford, Ed Martin, and Kathy Bailey. But on the flip side, Shelley May's donors include Hal Heiner, Ron Krim, Robin Engel, Bob Gable, Bill Stone, and don't forget the Jefferson County Teachers Union. Does it tell you folks that something's really perverted and twisted when the lady who used to be the chairman of the Republican Party in Louisville is running against a patriot in the primary, and she's running as a supposed Republican candidate after being the alleged supposed figurehead of the party in the state, or I'm sorry, in the county, and she's now endorsed and given money by the Jefferson County Teachers Association? Only in Louisville, Kentucky, would the Teachers Union Political Action Committee be hand-in-hand with the former chairman of the Republican Party. Only in freaking Louisville, Kentucky. Folks, we put the truth out there. Like our good friend, the late, great Hunter Thompson, also from Louisville, said, absolute truth is a very rare and dangerous commodity in the context of journalism. And no truer words are spoken. Because if you vote for people like the David Williamses and the Richie Farmers and the Tracens, And then you sit there and wonder what happened to the party, then you're completely asshat delusional. Oh, there's a lot of people out there that get excited because they think Kentucky's going to be the next right-to-work state. And yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice if our GOP really, really got behind Kentucky being a right-to-work state, which is the thing that scares the hell out of the unions. But if Kentucky is going to be a right-to-work state, then how is it that the same GOP that wants to back that has a candidate like Shelley May who's backed by the unions? And I know a lot of people think that I'm anti-union here. It's not about being anti or pro-union. It's about being free to choose whether you want to join a union or not. I want jobs to grow in Kentucky. We just saw we're going to lose more factory jobs in Kentucky with Toyota. We just saw what happened down with Fruit of the Loom. We just saw what happens when factories go away in Kentucky. And the Department of Labor statistics show their right-to-work states have greater economic vitality, faster growth in manufacturing and non-agricultural jobs, lower unemployment rates, and fewer work stoppages. Right-to-work states attract business. They must be competitive with good wages and benefits to attract the best employees. What's it going to be, folks? Are you going to make your state a free state and really stand up to the establishment? Are you happy just giving it lip service? Are you happy saying, oh, Mitch McConnell is looking out for us? Who the hell is he looking out for? I understand these establishment groups promote him. I understand the big U.S. Chamber of Commerce folks love him. Ed Springsteen made it clear last night how we feel about the Chamber of Commerce and what a joke they are. And I'm sure he'll be talking more next week about the new group that they are establishing here in Louisville, himself and his business partners, excuse me, and how they're actually going to promote small business in Kentucky. But when you have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce backing Mitch McConnell, and all of a sudden you come out with the American Conservative Union, which is far less conservative than groups like the Birch Society or the United Kentucky Tea Party or the Louisville Tea Party or the Central Kentucky Tea Party or Take Back Kentucky. Oh, yeah, newsflash. These groups all endorse Matt Devin, not Mitch McConnell. When you have all those groups who are true conservative constitutionalists endorsing Matt Devin, then you understand who the hell is behind the establishment. The Chamber of Commerce, the establishment, Kentucky Right to Life, and the very establishment, anti-gun, NRA. Then you flip it over, and Matt Bevin's endorsed by the Republican Liberty Caucus, by Freedom Works, by the Madison Project, by the Senate Conservatives Fund, by Joe the Plumber, by the really conservative, truly Second Amendment Gun Owners of America, by the Tea Party Patriot Citizens Fund, by Mandy Connell, by Mark Levine, by Right Wing News, by the Tea Party Patriot Citizens Fund, by Northern Kentucky Right to Life, by John Kemper, by Adrian Gilbert, by Wendy Caswell, by Janine Hampton, by Kenneth Franklin, by Roger Ford, by Carl Dickerson, by Rod Bradshaw, by Perry Lefebvre, by Colonel Mike Carden, by Boone County Constable Joe Khalil. And you really wonder who is for the establishment here and who is for liberty? I don't wonder. It's very clear to me who is for the establishment and who is for liberty. You're listening to the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. Again, to call in, 858-683-1326.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
We'll be right back. I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to your host, Dale the Truth, on the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. Remember, you can hear shows here 5 nights a week. Sunday night, our good friend Ken Moman, chairman of the Libertarian Party of Kentucky, does his Liberty Unbridled. And then we have Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, the Ed Springsteen Show. And here we are back on Thursday nights with TNT Radio. Another story we teased last night on the Springsteen Show was about the Pentagon and how they're going to destroy $1 billion in ammunition. Yes, you heard it right. The Pentagon plans to destroy more than $1 billion worth of ammunition, even though some of those bullets and missiles could still be used by the troops. According to the Pentagon and congressional sources, it's impossible to know what portion of the arsenal slated for destruction, valued at $1.2 billion by the Pentagon, remains viable because the Department of Defense's inventory systems won't share their data effectively. According to a Government Accountability Office report, the good old GAO, the result, potential waste of unknown value. There is a huge opportunity to save millions, if not billions of dollars, if the Pentagon could make some common sense improvements to how it manages ammunition. Remember, we've been talking about on the airwaves here for months now, literally months, about why these damn groups in the government keep buying up ammunition. Hell, the latest was the post office. Senator Tom Carper, Democrat of Delaware and chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, says despite years of effort, the Army, Navy, and Air Force still do not have an efficient process. Still do not have an efficient process for doing something as basic as sharing excess bullets. The GAO report clearly shows that our military's antiquated systems lead to millions of dollars in wasteful ammunition purchases. The Army and Pentagon, of course, in a statement acknowledge the need to automate the process, and they will make it a priority in future budgets, which we know that's bullshit. They're only mentioning it because the GAO office came out. Well, otherwise they wouldn't have said anything at all. In all, the Pentagon manages a stockpile of conventional ammunition worth $70 billion. And the effect of an accurate accounting of ammunition for troops at war was outside the scope of the study. However, there were limited supplies at times of 50 caliber machine gun and 9 millimeter handgun ammo at the height of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. We simply cannot afford this type of waste and ineffectiveness, said Carper. The Pentagon has a responsibility to efficiently manage its ammunition stocks, not only because it is important to be fiscally responsible, but also because our antiquated ammunition inventory systems can shortchange our warfighters and compromise their ability to complete their mission, blah, 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 blah. Here are some other findings from the report. The services, Armed Forces Services, have inventory systems for ammunition that cannot share data directly, despite working for decades to develop a single database. Only the Army uses the standard Pentagon format, but the Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps, well, the Marine Corps is part of the Navy, operate with formats that are obsolete. The services hold an annual conference to share information about surplus ammunition and swap bullets and other munitions as needed. But data about ammunition left over after the meeting disappears from the books. The data disappears from the books. What a shock, right? A request for ammunition, for example, for the Marine Corps is emailed to the Army. The email is then printed out and manually retyped into the Army system because the services cannot share data directly. Do you see how ridiculous that is? Not only is it wasting time, but they can introduce errors by an incorrect keystroke, for example. The waste of buying new ammunition while usable stockpiles exist can occur, quote, because the Army does not report information on all available and usable items, unquote. The report says that the annual conference among the services saves $70 million a year, but it's inadequate. Specifically, the Army's report does not include information from prior years about usable ammunition that was unclaimed by another service and stored for potential foreign military sales or slated for disposal. If we are to continue discovering better ways of doing things, folks, as many people as possible are going to have to be free as possible to experiment and innovate. I bet they're not even going to destroy the ammunition. No, the taxpayers are the ones who always pay. I can assure you get that. Okay, to personally sue individuals for government for their actions, maybe that would stop a lot of the corruption and waste. But they destroy the ammunition, or at least they pretend to on one hand, the whole sleight of hand, while the other hand takes it and empowers the nazification against the American people. This fascism that we've been talking about, the government does not serve the American people. It is not trustworthy. It is treasonous. On that note, I think we'll go to our good friend calling in. Paul, are you there?
Hi, Dale. Yes, this is Paul. Hey, listen, you were kind of musing about the wastefulness of the United States Department of Defense regarding these bullets that they want to destroy, some $1.2 billion. I wish I could say this was an isolated example of government waste. I know everybody knows that the United States government is extraordinarily wasteful, but very few of us have actually got to see it up close and personal. One of the spots that I got to see it back in the 2010 census was with the United States Census Bureau. And the bureaucracy in the Census Bureau is astonishing. It's astonishing. Everything has got to be scripted, and you've got to follow the script, whether it makes any sense or not, okay, including the training. The training is verbatim reading training. The instructor reads the entire lesson, which is sitting right in front of every student. It's insane. It's insane. So I'm not surprised, although I'm as irritated about the matter, and those of us over here at Stop Invisible Taxes, this is part of the reason Stop Invisible Taxes got founded, is because of stuff like this, both at the national as well as the local levels.
Well, you mentioned the census, Paul, and I guess I'll take that sidebar for a moment, because the census, we know what they're about. They claim to be about, what, collecting numbers every decade to determine how many people per congressional representative. That's supposedly the only thing they're supposed to do, but these forums, where they want to know about all the demographics and the background and the race and the creed and how many, I mean, I don't know what all there is on those forums, but some of those forums aren't just about how many people are in the household, and people I've said for a long time should tell the census to go to hell, because honestly, I don't see too many examples of people getting put in a cage for telling off the census. I guess I shouldn't give them ideas, but the census is a complete waste beyond what they're supposed to do, right, Paul?
Dale, you're more right than what you know, because actually I've been through a total of four decennial census. And I've asked various questions along the way, and what it boils down to is, if you ever have a United States Department of Commerce, U.S. Census Bureau individual come and tell you that they need to get your census questionnaire filled out, you are statutorily obligated only to give them your name. They've got your address already, because that's how they track you. They track you by your street address. And if you wish to disclose the name and the age of the occupants therein, you can. But beyond that, you're really not obligated to do anything. And they have taught in their training, this question comes up all the time, because they emphasize to the census taker trainees the federal law that mandates compliance with the census. Well, yes, it does. But they will not prosecute anybody, because the first time they do that, they will be pretty much signing the census death warrant, because that story will get out, and they simply won't prosecute anybody. It is a PR nightmare for them. So that's why you haven't heard of anybody going to jail for refusing to fill out the census. It's just a bad idea all the way around.
Well, Paul, they are correct about one tiny thing, which is the Constitution does allow the government to take a census every 10 years. But again, here's a little painless way that these people stand up for their rights, and I guess we won't see the census workers coming out of the woodwork like bugs. What is it, 2020 will be the next one? Is that correct?
Correct. Now, they're going to start clicking for that in 2018.
Say it again, please.
They're going to start preparing for the 2020 census in the year 2018. They always start on the decennial census 2 years out. Okay.
Well, good. If they're
going to start
in 2018, then we'll prepare our audience for them, because the fact is the census has one lawful purpose and one only, and that is to determine how many people live in a given area so the congressional districts can be divided up relatively equally. So when the census forms arrive in the mail, I know we're talking about stuff that's several years out, and this goes back for what happened last time, like Paul says, a few times that he's endured this. Give the feds precisely the information that they're legally entitled to. 1, 2, 3, or 4. That's the number you write down. That's all they need to know. They don't need to know your marital status. They don't need to know your race, the ages of family members, how many TVs you have. God forbid they start asking how many guns you have. Like you said, there are theoretically penalties for refusing, but as you just made it very clear, Paul, you never hear of anyone being put in a cage or prosecuted for telling a census taker to go to hell.
Now, there's another aspect of census taking that actually I got into a very intense discussion with the manager for field operations over this, and in fact, it actually directly led to my dismissal. In Kentucky, as most do, have a no trespassing law, okay? And one of the elements in Kentucky, for some of your listeners who may not know, Kentucky is an implied consent state, which means if you don't specifically tell somebody not to trespass, they have your implied consent. And the way you tell somebody not to trespass is that you either tell them orally or verbally, or you put a little sign out there that says no trespassing, okay?
Yeah.
And then if an individual chooses to cross the sign, they are legally trespassing and can be arrested by the police without any intervention or any action on the part of the resident. So that was a question that I posed in a training class.
Mm.
I said, I'm real familiar with Kentucky law about trespassing, and there are a number of people in the area that maintain no trespassing signs. What are we supposed to do when we have that? Because to cross the sign makes the party who crosses the sign a lawbreaker, and you know we are federal employees. We're not supposed to be breaking laws during the conduct of our business. The only retort that the trainer and this question, by the way, subsequently got bumped up all the way to Charlotte, North Carolina, the regional census office that covers Louisville, was that we as census takers need to make it crystal clear that we have the constitutional authority to take the census.
Yep. To take a
now,
number.
That answer,
1, 2, 3, 4, a number. That's all they have the right to do.
Okay. Well, the answer, Dale, as you noticed, never addressed the issue of trespassing.
Nope.
And because I was going to be a crew leader, I maintained that I need to have an official determination in writing that says that somebody in the Census Bureau has instructed the census takers that it's okay to cross a no trespassing sign in Kentucky, even though that would make the census taker a lawbreaker. And you know,
where's
Dale,
my question?
That was the question when I was insisting on getting that in writing.
Right.
That was the question that got me terminated, and I'm serious as a heart attack.
No,
they
I don't doubt
terminated
it.
Terminated me,
Paul, since we're talking about the laws in the state, and you're talking about these private property rules and laws. My question for you, Paul, because I know that you probably know these state laws a little better than I, what about when you see these signs that people put up that say no solicitation or no soliciting?
That would probably get into an interpretation of the trespassing law on that.
Right.
But I think that could be reasonable. The law a lot of times actually states that that what, how would a reasonable person interpret the situation? And right. No solicitation is implied no trespassing. Don't bother me. Okay?
Well, like you just said, so, if you don't put up no trespassing signs, either in written form or verbally, it's implied in Kentucky law that they may do that. And I could see, I'm guessing that the census workers, I'm guessing much like the postal office, they probably see themselves as some kind of weird quasi-government agency, right?
Well, the ones in management do, Dale. But remember, the census takers for the decennials, they are every single one of them, including to the like Louisville office. Every person in the Louisville office was a temporary worker. So a lot of these folks are simply looking for some additional income to tide them over. They're in between jobs. Or sometimes it's a retired person looking for a little extra money. So these are not professional bureaucrats that come to your door. However, they're the ones that are in harm's way. They're the ones that get bitten by dogs, you know.
Right.
But the management, senior management people are bureaucrats, yes.
Well, I was going to say, not just senior management, but they have some people who work in the offices, like over in Southern Indiana, are just temporary, am I right? They have some full-time or at least regular part-time employees on their payroll there.
That's correct.
I knew when I worked there, but they used to tell me over and over, I worked with them in another location, but their second job was across the river with the Census Bureau, and they talked about all the time about how they could just get over there after work, how they had these cuckoos of overtime waiting for them, where they bragged that they could just sit there and, like you said, basically just read the law and do next to nothing.
Yeah, that's where they receive the census questionnaires, encode them, and then they warehouse them for the state, for whatever the requirements are.
If you have all this overtime over there, then why are you working at your other job? And the way they explained it to me, it was still kind of muddy waters to me, but I guess the money isn't full-time or isn't regular employment in that they couldn't count on it enough to quit their other job. But again, they bragged about this, and it made me think about the solicitation laws too, because I thought about putting out a no soliciting sign, because frankly I get tired of the kids from the government indoctrination camps coming begging for money for their overpriced candy bars. I don't want them bothering me. I am like Clint Eastwood. When people make fun of Clint Eastwood's character in Gran Torino saying get off my lawn, but, Paul, those are people who are laughing at private property rights and acting like they don't matter, and private property rights do matter. So I know here where I live, the mailman doesn't come to my porch because my mail route, I guess you would call it, is one of those where the boxes are like on the side of the road, right? You've seen these neighborhoods. And so the mailman takes the mail to the box, and frankly, I don't really want him on my porch anyway. I mean, unless he's bringing me a package, he's got no right to be on my porch. So, again, if I had a no soliciting sign up when it comes time for the census zombies to come back around in the turn of the decade, wouldn't that no soliciting apply to them as well?
Yes. Because while they may be bound to take the census, they're bound also to take the census in a legal way,
yep.
And that means that they cannot violate laws. That means it's just that simple. It really is
Paul,
that simple.
Paul, you talked about you've been involved in a few censuses over the years, or census, I guess we might call them. Isn't it true that they're getting a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? They're getting a lot more aggressive, that now if you don't give them what they want in the last couple of times around, that they'll now go around and snoop around to your neighbors to get information about you?
Well, that particular training aspect has actually been in place for all four censuses that I've been involved in. So that's nothing new, but your description that they're becoming a little more aggressive, that is true. They actually have emphasized that in this last training I went through. But, yeah, the government agents are, in fact, asking your neighbors about you and your household if you refuse. Yes.
Well, my point about 100%
true, Dale. 100% true.
My point about them becoming more aggressive, Paul, is remember recently the federal government not only has been doing the census And then we'll get into conspiracy theory about if this is going to maybe replace the census one day. But remember, they supplemented the census with the awesomely invasive American Community Survey.
Well, the American Community Survey, Dale, is just one of many things. They call them longitudinal studies, okay? And I will have to tip my hat to the Census Bureau's design team. The questionnaires are designed just masterfully in terms of being able to – they're really, really good demographers, okay? So on that point, I'm going to give the Census Bureau an A for being excellent demographers. Now, as far as being good stewards of the public trust, I would have to – after what I heard the Obama administration was going to do with tracking the Unaffordable Care Act impact, I'm going to give the Census Bureau an F if they kowtow to the Obama administration's directive. Remind your listeners of that directive, which is a fairly new directive. Go ahead and bring them up to date on that.
Well, I'll go back to one thing I was wanting to mention here in the times here that we have is that the American Community Survey, I want to mention that one for a moment. Like you said, they're masterfully put out there with the demographic, but the threatened penalties are bigger, and the government may even send someone to your door to enter your info directly into a laptop computer. So to make it even more disgusting, the Bureau recently admitted to losing, if you remember the story from about a decade ago, losing 600 laptops. Do you remember that?
No, but that would match my experience with the Census Bureau in terms of being good stewards of our money.
600 laptops.
When you get into a certain level of management in the Census Bureau, you can make all kinds of things happen on the books. I was in the administration group where we actually did the filling of the jobs, and one of the other tasks of the administration group was taking care of the storeroom for the entire Louisville decennial census operation. Well, nobody wanted that job, and I knew I could do it, so I went back there and organized it. Really did a top-notch job. Got it to the point where I didn't even need to be there. The inventory control was stellar. However, the decisions made by local office management superseded any controls that I had in place. So if they wanted to make something disappear at the local level, it would be very easy because nobody above the local office level is checking on those types of devices. They're not. They don't worry about it.
So
laptop disappearing.
Yeah, if they hide something or lose it or misplace it or don't know where they left it or whatever vernacular they want to call it, who's going to hold them responsible, Paul? There's no checks and balances.
Nobody.
No one's
gonna... You're 100% right. 100% right. There was no one being held accountable for those types of things happening in the office in which I work. And that's been the case throughout all four decennial censuses. So you can't blame the people who were hired for any given decennial. You can blame the systemic issue with Washington's D.C. The U.S. Bureau of Census actually operates. So it's them. That's where the institutional controls are severely lacking.
Yep. I agree, Paul. I appreciate you weighing in with us here as we got off on a bit of a tangent, but it's still about government workers. We appreciate Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes from weighing in because, it's not census time yet, and we're a little bit out of season, so we'll have to revisit the topic. But remember, nobody has yet paid these threatened fines, and the government has no lawful authority to demand such information from you. I go to the famous quote by Robert Schauberle, if we can ever make red tape nutritional, we can feed the world. And we know for a long time no one gave a damn about the Bill of Rights, except for one lonely congressman from Texas named Ron Paul. Nobody in the federal government cared about the Bill of Rights anymore. And we the people should take care not to forget it. We have a few more people in government. Still a very few, but the numbers are trickling up, not down. And you can find a lot of good websites out there, like the Constitution Society, with all kinds of good sources and publishes and freedom-oriented publications. Now, when you're facing these government hacks, it kind of draws me back to when we talk about the guys and gals wearing the black muumuus and a wonderful story, a wonderful, wonderful story that was written by Ayn Rand in a book called Atlas Shrugged. Was a story where Mr. Reardon was standing there before the court. And Mr. Reardon told the court, "I have no defense." And the judge stumbled, do you throw yourself upon the mercy of this court?" And Mr. Reardon says, "No, I do not recognize this court's right to try me." And then the judge in the black muumuu said, "But Mr. Reardon, this is the legally appointed court to try your particular category of crime." And Mr. Reardon replied, "I do not recognize my action as a crime." And the judge, getting angrier, said, "But you have admitted you have broken our regulations concerning the sales of your metals." And Mr. Reardon said, "I do not recognize your right to control the sale of my metals." The judge says, "Is it necessary for me to point out that your recognition was not required?" And here's the kicker, my friends. Mr. Reardon said, "No, I am fully aware of it, and I'm acting accordingly. I am complying with the law to the letter. Your law holds that my life, my work, and my property may be disposed of without my consent. Very well, you may now dispose of me without my participation in the matter. I will not play the part of defending myself where no defense is possible, and I will not simulate the illusion of dealing with a tribunal of justice." And that was Hank Reardon in Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Folks, what it comes down to is this. Who is the criminal? Is the criminal he who illegally hid Jews in his attic? Or is criminal the one who illegally came to arrest the Jews? Is the criminal the one who grows herbs, dare we say hemp or marijuana, for a sick friend? Or is the criminal the one who legally throws the grower into a government-sanctioned cage? Is the criminal the old man who protects his neighbor with a gun? Or is the criminal the law enforcement officer who seizes the gun and handcuffs the man and tases him and shoots his wife and dog? Is the criminal the one who lies on a government form to protect his privacy? Or is the criminal the one who earns her living maintaining the government database that consumes your privacy? And finally, is the criminal the one who refuses a government license? Or are the criminals the ones who turn the right to travel, work, and practice self-defense into privileges? Think about it, folks. Are you the criminal or are you the patriot?
"Well, they're here. I locked the door, but I can see them through the window. One of them is waving at me to shut down. I'm giving him the finger. I'll shut down when I'm goddamn good and ready."